Hello, and welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I am Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hi, Gray Henson.
Hello, spooky, spooky.
I caught you sipping something. What are you drinking?
H2O.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a drug. I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous.
In my heart and mind, I'm drinking a bubbly H2O, which is not a surprise.
Spindrift. Love
indeed.
You.
Well, great. Look, number one, we are so excited to have you join us today. Number two, for those Broadway fans listening, they also know that you're a Tony Award nominee. You have a fabulous, incredible, sorted career. And today, we don't want to talk about that.
Oh, thank God.
Isn't it funny, Jen, that that's the response we've been getting most of the time?
Every time.
Oh,
every
really?
Time. Well, yeah, obviously we all got into this because it was our passion, right? But anytime your passion starts to become your job, it's always nice to step away and talk about other things. Mm-hmm. For example, Jessica, once we started doing this true crime podcast, I've slowed down on the true crime podcast I'm listening to.
I have to get back into it.
Right, same. Because we're doing this so much. So, it's, mm-hmm. you know, that's normal.
That's normal. A lot of true crime. That's a lot of true crime for one person.
Yeah.
I still quite love it. I can stomach a lot, but I am like.
Oh, I'm going to go back.
This is our bebé.
Yeah. But truly, truly, all Jess and I seem to like to talk about is true crime. We're a little sick, but that's literally why we're here. And I know, having worked with you, that you're obsessed with it too. Mm. And I also know you're from Georgia and you chose today's case, the Woolfolk Massacre. So we are wondering, A, why are you into true crime? Meaning, what are the things that made you realize you're into true crime? And B, did this case have anything to do with it? And either way, I'd love for you to explain to our listeners your connection to it. So those are those two points.
I think it all started for me in the 90s watching Unsolved Mysteries because what was the name of the narrator with the voice? Do you guys know who I'm talking about? The man
Robert Stack?
I don't know, but just
I have no idea.
That haunting
Smokey,
raspy,
Smokey, look it up.
Look it up. But I was just obsessed with that show and all throughout my adolescence into I don't know, older age. I've always loved history. And beyond just true crime, I love historic sites and locations. And like you said, I grew up in Macon, Georgia, where I am right now visiting my parents in COVID, Coco Roro, which I'm obsessed.
Thank you for saying it. It's appropriate.
I want the perfume Coco Roro.
It is. It's a good French brand that's a little bit of danger mixed with beer.
We've made it. It's coming out later this year.
Please. In Macon, there's like a bunch of really rich history and there's a lot of preserved architecture. And it was because randomly in the Civil War, when they burned down Atlanta a la Gone with the Wind, Macon was just bypassed. And so Macon is very much a preserved city. And so I've always been fascinated with these homes and these spaces that look like they did at like the turn of the century or someplace like way back in the day. And I've always had this, I can't really put it into words, but I want to go into a place that looks exactly as it did at the time when it was in its heyday. Do you know what I mean? Like I love going into a home that is staged to look exactly as it did at the time. And so in that vein, I've sort of always been fascinated by specifically turn of the century murders, like Lizzie Borden, all of that stuff that really happened, like Jack the Ripper. I'm obsessed with all of that. I have this affinity for the Victorian era for some reason. So anyway, I love all things spooky. I'm a spiritual person. I love talking about the afterlife, ghosts and whatever. Anyway, and so in Macon, you sent me the link for a bunch of Georgia murders that you guys could possibly talk about. And the first one on the link was this murder case. And I remember actually recently, my mom was telling me that We live in Macon, like right outside of the downtown area, which used to be like the hub of the city. And it's a little mm-hmm. deserted now, but it's coming back. But where we live is on the property that this family owned. And so basically at the time in the late 1800s, they owned like all of Macon, Georgia. They owned so much of it. And so mm-hmm. even though they owned where we live, like this is the place, they lived actually kind of far-ish away, like maybe 10 minutes away. So like...
My understanding is we're talking about almost 900 acres of land.
Massive. I just want to say that makes sense to me. I don't think... Yeah. I mean, that's not a lot of land, you know, to think about really in these times. So, I mean, I'm also not disappointed. Like, I'm sort of disappointed that it's not as many acres as like 20,000, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
But I don't want to seem overzealous. So.
No. I think Jess's future husband's going to need to come pack in with a lot of land is what you're saying.
I mean, you know, is there a creek, a river, and a pond, and a Victorian home where Gray can hunt ghosts? You know what I mean? Like, that seems yeah. appropriate for Gray to come into when I get married.
I'm going to be a bridesmaid. I'll sing. I want to offer my singing services at your future wedding. But Gray, your point about history is really something, because you want to go back in time and see the buildings as it was. And you're in the vicinity on the land, along with your neighbors that this family owned. And sometimes I like to close my eyes in that kind of situation and picture what it was like before all those roads and buildings were there. And, you know, what were the trees that were here and the flowers and the...
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
The wheat. Anyway, we're super excited you're here, and basically you're on the property, man. That's ish a property adjacent, whatever. It's cool.
I do think it's really cool. Creepy. There's like little things like that all over Macon, and of course there's a lot of like terrible history surrounding these southern cities. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Fill in the blank there, but like little cool things like in the road that is in front of our house, you can still see the trolley tracks where the trolley would run to go downtown and then bring people up to their houses. This house that I grew up in, that my parents still live in, was built, I think, in the 20s. A judge, like one of the, you know, Macon, Georgia judges lived here for years and years and years. And that's the other thing. It's like, I love researching a place that I've been. That's why New York City is so cool to me too, because so much of it is preserved. But I will say going to London, you get more of that in London. Do you know what I mean? But like,
yeah, we're a very young country.
Yeah. But in Macon, there's just so much that I wish I could see pictures of this house in the 20s. You know, I'm obsessed with the haunting and the spooky and stuff like that.
You want pictures of your house?
The house that I live in, like, I want to see who lived in this room and what it looked mm-hmm. like. And do you know what I mean? Like, my brother has seen ghosts in this house too, which I guess we can dive into later, because I'm curious if maybe one of the ghosts in the story is haunting the home, but I haven't seen her.
Oh my God. Is this a thrill and a half for me? I don't know about you guys. I'm obsessed with ghost hunters. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then you say they take a picture, and then in the picture, there's a thing, and then they see the shadow and the whole nine yards, and you're like, are you, you know, mm-hmm. like, please understand, we are not trying to harm you. Like,
I know,
like, I'm not going to hurt your area. And mm-hmm. I love that. I just, I dig it. I dig it deep.
If it weren't for the Coco,
Jessica, I would want to do a road trip down to Gray's house right now without telling him, dress up in some white chiffon, some makeup, hide in his closet.
I'd go as Fermi
and
Sarah.
Scare him. Yeah. You'd go, yes. Yeah, absolutely you would. Remind me to tell you for our listeners my Frumacera story.
Great.
Miss Jessica, maybe I'll do it right now. When I was 5 years old, I used to listen to that album ad nauseum. I was in my basement, and whenever Frumacera would come on, I was so scared of Frumacera. I would run up the stairs and hide at the top of the stairs with a blanket. But I couldn't leave the room because I had to keep listening to her. I had to just escape, you know, because it was terrifying. And now you terrify me every day. Mm-hmm. So it's full circle.
And it's that's the hope.
Let's get us back.
Let's get us back. We're bringing us back in. So we start with our credit where credit is due. This story is from an old article in the Tennessean located at newspapers.com. That old chestnut. This is the Woolfolk Massacre. Just before dawn on the morning of August 6th, 1887, in Hazard's District, Bibbs County, some 12 miles away from Macon, 9 people were brutally murdered. The victims were Captain Richard F. Woolfolk Sr., his wife, Miss Maddie Woolfolk, their children, Richard F. Jr., aged 20, Susan Pearl, aged 17, Annie, aged 10, Rosebud, that name, aged 7, Charlie, aged 5, Maddie, aged 18 months, and Mrs. Temple West, aged 84. The scene of the crime itself was the Woolfolk homestead, located on an 867-acre plantation. And yes, we've discussed that now Gray lives on some of those acres in an ordinary southern country farmhouse. It was one story high and with 4 rooms, 2 on either side of a central corridor. And it was in this home that Captain Woolfolk and his family were living at the time of the tragedy. On the Saturday night preceding the fatal Sunday morning, there were 10 members of the household present, including 84-year-old Mrs. West, who was just a visitor in the house.
I'm sorry, Jessica, may I interrupt you for a
you
moment?
You must.
I'm pretty sure that would be me. I would be old Mrs. West, like just a recluse in the pandemic. Just like, I'm going to, you know what? I need to see people. I just need to see some. Tonight's the night. I'm going to live my best life of all the nights.
Right? Not even related. Not related to the family at all.
Yeah. Like you're the one who comes over to play the piano because nobody else can. Like that's who, that's what happened.
Right?
Is that you came over and you were like, I just learned something on the piano.
I know. Poor Mrs. West. I mean, poor the whole family, but you know?
Yeah. What I mean, Mrs. West, anyway? Yeah, she didn't need to be there, but she was. And, you know, as we move forward, Thomas G. Woolfolk, the eldest son, along with Richard and Charlie, were sleeping in the first room on the left of the single front door. In the next room, Captain and Mrs. Woolfolk and their infant child lay in the one bed in the room. The other 3 children, Pearl, Annie, and Rosebud, along with Mrs. West, or Mrs. West, occupied the room on the opposite side of the hallway from the parents' room. A lot of sleepovers is what I'm... You know what I'm saying? A lot of sleepovers.
Right. And it's also, wait, what month is this too? It's August in Georgia in August. I'm going to say it's pretty hot.
Brutal. Yeah.
No, right. No air conditioning. Mm-mm. I should have looked up the weather for that day next time. So at dawn, Tom Woolfolk, the only survivor of the massacre, went not far from the Woolfolk house and yelled that someone had killed his father. The news of the crime quickly spread and soon a crowd was gathered. 9 dead bodies were lying in the house, every one of them hit with an ordinary wood axe that had evidently been secured from the yard. There was nothing unusual found in the first room on the left as one entered the house, but in the room occupied by the parents were 6 bloody corpses, the bodies of Captain Woolfolk, his wife, their infant, and Miss Pearl. They lay on the bed in the corner. The father, the mother, and the baby had been struck on the head with the axe apparently before they wakened, while the eldest daughter's body had been placed on the bed after her death. On the floor were the lifeless bodies of Richard Woolfolk and his younger brother, Charles, both lying in pools of blood. Gosh, okay, this gets really tough. So death in each case was caused by blows with the butt axe of the axe.
Oh,
I know, except in the case of the little boy, whose head had been hit with the axe blade, and they still lay in their nightgowns, their night garments. 3 other bodies lay in the girls' room on the other side of the corridor, the corpse of Mrs. West and of Rosebud, the 7-year-old daughter, where they had slept side by side in one of the 2 beds in the room. And this is probably the hardest to hear. The body of 10-year-old Annie Woolfolk lay near the window as if she had been warned of the murderer, and so she tried to escape by jumping out of the window. Here, as with those in the first room, the killer dispatched of the victims with blows to the head with his axe. Nothing in the house had been disturbed, and a small amount of money was in the pockets of Richard Woolfolk Jr. There was no indication whatsoever that that robbery had been the motive.
Oh,
that's rough, guys.
Oof.
Yeah, it's rough. And to think this happened back in the olden days, but this could have happened yesterday is basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's scariest to think of someone's mind just going somewhere in that place where you have to kill and kill and kill and kill, right? It's not just one premeditated murder. It seems like something switched in this person's brain and, you know, he went for it. Wait, also, pardon me, is the name of the son who they think did it, the only survivor, you said Thomas G?
Let's check. It is definitely Thomas. Yes, Thomas G.
Okay, you know, that's my name is Thomas Gray Henson. And
are you the murderer? Is it you? Are you a ghost?
Why did you choose this case? It's because you did it.
I wanted to come out and tell you guys here and now that
in your past life. This happened in your past. We pride ourselves as doctors here, and now obviously you're one of the fold, Dr. Henson, but we pride ourselves in having exclusives. And the exclusive of this episode is that in a past life, Thomas Gray Henson could have been associated with this murder. And I'm not judging you now. I know this is a new life that you're in.
Yeah.
But thank God we know.
Yeah.
And I want to say, Jen, thank God we got the exclusive again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm an actor now in this life. I'm an actor now in this life. So I haven't thought about murdering anyone.
That's okay. But you could do it in the TV film. We can adapt it for the Hallmark Channel is basically what we're trying to say.
Honestly, I've been dying to be in a period piece, you know?
Yeah. And who does it better than Hallmark, really, these days? I digress. And I move on. The story told by Tom Woolfolk in the 1800s is that he had been awakened by hearing his father cry out a little bit before dawn. Just then, Richard had jumped out of bed and ran into his father's room. He heard Richard knocked down. And then, fearing for his own life, he, Tom, had fled, jumping out of a window in his room and running to Green Socket's cabin, same, to raise the alarm and secure help. Woolfolk's account of the crime was unsatisfactory and few believed it. So, naturally, suspicion quickly fell on him as the murderer and he was taken into custody. Investigation showed that the only tracks about the house in the bloodstained floor were those of Woolfolk. Tom admitted they were his, but said he made them when he went into the room after the murder. Tom was searched, and on one leg, just around his knee, was the imprint of a bloody hand. He also had on a shirt much too large for him, and afterwards his own shirt was found in the well, blood-stained, and, brace yourselves, covered in human brains.
Ew.
For anybody who's listening who can't see what happened, Gray just gasped.
Oh, sorry. I forget this isn't a live Zoom featurette.
Like, I know. That's why we like to tell. We love to tell our listeners what just happened on our screen, and that was that Gray just gasped.
Human brains on his shirt. Mm-hmm. On his peasant blouse from the 1800s.
And puffy shirt. The puffy shirt. Also, regarding, like, I'd say the bloody handprint on his knee, I'm going to call that evidence.
I would venture to guess in the world of investigative reporting, it would be evidence.
How much time do you think passed from the murders to when they discovered brains on his shirt? And why didn't he try to shake them off?
It's a great question. I think I heard that.
Ask your past self, Gray.
You tell us, Gray.
This episode is brought to you by our best friends at Spindrift. Yes, you heard me. Best friends. For those who know us, you know how addicted we are to true crime and sparkling water. Cue the day when we were both starring in Broadway shows and stumbled upon the Holy Grail, Spindrift.
America's first sparkling water with real squeezed fruit. Yep. That's it. 11 flavors with no worries about any chemicals going into your body. You'll have a crush on all flavors, trust us.
Oh, and they make the perfect mixer for your holiday bevies too. Ugh, the possibilities are endless. Just go now to drinkspindrift.com, find your match, and use our sassy sparkling code KILLIT20 at checkout and get 20% off your first order. Self-care, baby. After all, it's necessary in 2020.
I think it happened between 4 and 6 a.m. is what I read somewhere. And this is one thing, like, it seems like a lot for one person to accomplish successfully, doesn't it?
It does.
You know?
In this day and age, yes. But I'm trying to keep remembering that this happened in such a different time. Mm-hmm. And as far as, you know, whoever happened to be investigating or, you know, whatever the police force was at the time or, you know, any bureau of investigations at the time is sort of, you know, you do wonder how soon after were they able to search the area. If they knew that human brains were on his shirt, that's got to be a huge red flag and probably discovered quite quickly after the murders occurred. Mm-hmm. So a property search must have happened. For me, it's like the alarm goes off that there's an issue. Why do you have a bloody handprint on your leg?
Yeah.
And, you know, in all of these crimes too, we pick and choose so that it's not a 9-episode anthology. But there was a fella who was accused of being his accomplice. But after talking with the judge said, I'm going to drop the charges, but you get to go to an insane asylum for the rest of your life, you know?
Fun.
So, I mean, ultimately they say it was him, but there still is quite a bit of speculation about this case, but we'll get there, I guess.
Well, if he was a farmhand, he knew how to handle an axe. It wouldn't have been difficult for him to go around and do it all in one night. And I'm assuming they lived in the middle of nowhere, because at this point, like where I'm living now, is just acres and acres of just woodland, right? And so it maybe didn't happen in like 30 minutes. I'm sure it took a while, but... What else is crazy about this time period is like, even in the 70s, like they're just, the evidence is just so shoddy. So everything, think about the 1860s, right? I mean, no photography. There was no way to really securely document so many things that could have happened. Mm-hmm. Like it's such a mystery. And that's why I think this one is super spooky.
Oh yeah. And we've had chats with experts recently who have said, we've said, why is it so important that you find as much information as possible within the first 48 hours of a crime, right? We've all watched the A&E television show. Shout out A&E, sponsor us. But it's the kind of thing where you have to do it within the first 48 hours because evidence gets old. You can forget things. Things can get lost. Things can get jumbled. And again, you make a great point. There's no film. There's no way to preserve this kind of stuff, at least by the standards that we do now. So, and then if there's somebody who's an accomplice who's like able to talk to the judge and have some sort of persuasive information where they're like, bro, just lock me up, like put me in a padded room instead. I would be totally happy there. Like, let's just do that. And the judge is like, okay, you helped me with that cow once. You know, that seems to be what this is. That would never happen today. I really don't think that would ever happen today.
No.
But at least we have Gray though, and we can get a DNA sample from him.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Hazard.
I love that whenever I have a question, they're like, well, you should know. It's me. Gray. I think I did do this. Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay. I'm coming clean now. I asked my mom about this because she is an author. She's written a few. She actually randomly, sidebar, mystery folks. She wrote a Nancy Drew book in the 80s. They were the Nancy Drew files. And you could send in a storyline as, you know, a ghostwriter.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm going to.
Paige Henson.
I'm going to need it.
Wow. Well, this is funny because the next thing I'm about to say has to do with the motive for the crime, which was Tom Woolfolk's dislike for his stepmother. And it's always the mothers. It's always the mothers.
Yeah, why, evil stepmother. You know,
evil stepmother, the psychology of, you know, boys and their mothers or stepmothers. We always have this is the kind of thing, we talk about it all the time, where it's the psychology of why somebody does the things that they do. And normally it always tracks back to childhood.
It's Oedipal. Gray,
you love your mother. She's such a beautiful woman. I've met her, and I'm so glad you have a chance to heal that relationship in this lifetime.
That's why I was made gay this time, and I have a great relationship with my mother. No, but she was telling me about this, and the thing that she wanted me to mention, because, you know, she's obsessed with all this stuff too, is that the family at the time in Macon, they were super predominant. She said it would be like in Bibb County here in Macon if like the Kennedys were all slaughtered in one night. Like, obviously they weren't like, it wasn't like a mansion of a home, but they were really well known and they owned so much land in Macon. So to wake up and to hear this entire family was slaughtered, she said would have been really like a shock to everyone.
Wow. Well, it's interesting because his issue with his stepmother, and now that we know that this is such a prominent family within the community at the time, it was his desire to have undisputed possession of his father's property. And now that would be an issue if it was contested by his stepmother. So Captain Woolfolk was married twice. With his first wife, he had two daughters and one son, being Tom. Because of certain business complications, he gave the bulk of his property to his second wife. but he still gave his elder children their share. Now, Tom naturally was not satisfied with this. He hated his stepmother and her children because of it. And at the time of the murder, he'd returned to his father's house after having spent all the money his father had given him, first in farming and then in running a store in Macon. And he was working on the farm until he could get something better to do. At the time, Woolfolk was 27 years of age. He's about average height, compactly built, with dark hair, eyes, and a mustache. Is this my type? I don't know. It sounds like it, but it makes me feel awkward. His expression was rather boyish than otherwise, and he had always been of a sullen disposition and made few friends. His dislike for his stepmother and her children was very well known, and he'd been heard to say that he ought to have the old man's property, and he intended to have it someday.
So Woolfolk, I can't say his name, you guys.
I know, the L turns into an R sometimes. I say I just forget about the L, and I go, Woolfolk.
All right, Woolfolk was charged. Thank you. Say it again. Woolfolk?
I don't know. Yeah, Woolfolk. Woolfolk?
Okay. Woolfolk, Tom. Guys, Tom was charged with the murder of the Tom was charged with the murder of the 9 members of his father's household by the coroner's jury. And in December 1887, he was brought to trial in Macon before Judge Gustin of the Bibb County Superior Court. The theory of the defense was that, and this is hard to read, but this is a quote from the newspaper, guys. The theory of the defense was that a, quote, crazy Negro of the neighborhood had committed the crime, end quote.
Oh, God.
Right? Times have changed. Right?
Wow. Yeah, it's so much better now.
Right? It never changes. Just blame the black man. But this theory thankfully failed and was practically abandoned before the trial ended. The jury found Woolfolk guilty after only a few minutes, and he was sentenced to death. The Supreme Court granted a new trial, however, and in March 1889, he was tried at Perry in, and Gray, is this Houston or Houston County in Georgia?
Houston.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was tried at Perry in Houston County, a change of venue having been granted because a jury could not be secured in Bibb. Again, Tom Woolfolk was convicted. Another appeal was taken, but the Supreme Court sustained the other court's decision, and he was finally sentenced to be hanged at Perry on October 29th. Tom maintained his innocence through his 3-year imprisonment. When he spoke of the crime, he denied that he did it, but seldom expressed regret for the death of his relatives. And that is the story of the Woolfolk Massacre. I want to talk about a couple things. I didn't know you could be tried for the same crime twice, and it's weird to me that I don't understand. The Supreme Court overturned it, but then he's tried again for the same crime. Do you know what I mean? Did that seem weird to you?
No, to me it does not seem weird. I feel as though that is, once you get to the Supreme Court level where they can grant a new trial, you do have to bring new evidence. At least I believe that's what the case nowadays. Again, listeners who are aficionados in this department, we always love your advice and your kind words and comments. So if I, as Dr. Vosk, am wrong about this, I will absolutely take it. But I do think that once it hits Supreme Court level, they can try the trial again. And that's it. But that's it. You don't get any more chances after that.
Gray, I had found you can actually find the ruins of the house. Did you know that?
I tried not to Google too much of this so I could listen and be surprised here, but I did, read that just earlier today, but is there an exact location on Google?
No, I'll send you something I read about that. I think it's located on someone's personal property, and there was someone in the 90s who was investigating this for something they were writing, and they gave great thanks to the property owners for letting them know, but I think it's purposefully not a drive-by situation. If you know what
I
mean.
A landmark, sure. But the family is buried right down the street at Rose Hill Cemetery, which is, unfortunately, I hate to say this, is where me and my friends in middle school would go do fun photo shoots. You know,
can you do a fun photo shoot for us before we post this episode?
I should. That would be, I absolutely
actually,
should.
We would love that. We would
I know.
Love that.
It's where some of the Allman Brothers are buried, too. It's Macon is crazy, y'all. Macon is crazy, y'all.
Look, I mean, I'll tell you what. My favorite band of all time is from Georgia, being the Indigo Girls. And I was just in Georgia for a very long time last year doing a show. I love Georgia. Yeah. And any, you know, we also love a photo shoot in the cemetery. And, yeah, and we welcome that footage as well.
I'll get you guys.
If you wanted to go on a tour of the 900 acres and like film yourself on the entire tour of it, we would also take that. If you did like a, if you did, what's that? What's the old movie where she's in the woods?
The Blair Witch Project.
The Blair Witch Project.
If that, I mean, it sounds like it could be like that for you, Gray. If you walked around, you were like,
if you could just reenact for us what you did in 1897.
The well. Where's the well?
Mm-hmm. I need to get in contact with a medium who then can talk to me and get me in that headspace. Because then I'll have information for you guys if I can get there. Yeah.
We've got that. We've got that covered. We can get you a medium right away.
Yeah. So sources say that this gentleman was a psychopath. Sounds like
it. I always think these are the things, though, that you still hear stories about. And it always has to do with money. It always has to do with... Mm-hmm. I was owed this much money, or I feel I deserve this life insurance policy, or
in which case we'd all be murderers, right?
Yes.
Right. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I feel I'm owed millions of dollars from who? Doesn't matter. But that's how this shit goes. And I don't understand how someone can work themselves up into a space where the only option they have is to kill someone and say,
and not just someone, like so many people. I mean, that's why I think mental health is an issue here, right? I don't think you just snap like that and kill that many people. And also, does he think that by killing all of the people, he would get the money and the property? Like it seems like there is a screw loose here. And that's what's so crazy to me, because the human brain is so powerful and dark and scary sometimes. Right. And so I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like there's something else had to have been going on with this person that was undiagnosed, and he obviously wasn't treating, right?
Yeah. And Gray, we didn't ask you this earlier, but as an actor, why do you think those of us in this field on Two Show Days were always listening to these kinds of true crime shows? Why do you think we are drawn to this kind of thing, if you had to guess? Or people in general? Why do you think people are drawn to it?
Yeah, I think... I don't know. You guys are probably the same way. I love watching people. Just people watching is really fascinating to me, because I want to know why people do the things they do. And then to watch a play or a show or a musical, I gravitate towards performances that are really specifically unique, that I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, I've done that weird, strange thing. It's not just a wash of like, I'm the happy character and I'm the sad one. Like, it's really fun to dive into the nuances of someone's psyche. And so that's why all of these cases are so interesting to me, because you're like, why would someone get to that point in their lives where they feel like they needed to kill somebody? You know what I mean?
Totally.
We find that to be, I mean, that's why we listen to them. I've always been the one that's like, we get into other people's brains. We have to do it as empaths in the jobs that we have. And that it's just a fascination of how your brain can go to such an extreme and be so manipulated by your own thoughts, especially back in a time when there was no, I mean, you're talking late 1800s. You're talking absolutely zero. The only manipulation station could be what? Newspapers or other family members or those people around you. Like, you'll wind up talking to a tree. If I in 2020 can sit here and have a conversation with my salt lamp, then somebody back in the 1800s probably had several conversations with animals, the walls, and wallpaper. Yeah. Like, and that is an easy way for your brain to go a little bit cuckoo ca-choo. But yeah. I want to kind of go back, because you said that your brother thinks that he has seen some ghosts in your home, and I want to know more about
it. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you the stories. So I was probably about 4 or 5. My brother's a few years older than I am. And we were coming home late from, I think, a birthday party or something that was in Atlanta. So it was a drive away. And so I was asleep in the back seat, and we pulled up in our driveway. And our house, if you look open the front door, you can see all the way to the back of the house. And so there's a little mail slot in our front door. It's the original front door from the 20s. And my brother, you know, 7 or 8 years old, runs up before we're all at the front door at the late at night. I'm asleep. My dad's carrying me to the house. And he opens up the mail slot and looks in the dark house. And straight back into the back room, he sees a woman, like a fully woman in this huge white gown, he said, that was just floating or standing, and then she snapped her head and looked at him and disappeared. And
it was Mrs. West. It was 84-year-old Mrs. West.
Honestly,
I'm sure of it.
Quite possibly. And he started screaming and freaked out, and my dad went through the whole house with a flashlight and saw nobody, right? And so my brother... And I had never seen this ghost. And my brother's always the one that has the weird sort of moments in the house. And I don't know if he's just more in tune, I guess, with that stuff. But also randomly, another thing happened to him kind of recent. I was in college and my parents were driving me to the airport to go home for Thanksgiving or to finish the semester or something. And my brother was in his bedroom by himself in the house, and he had a guitar against the wall. And it was, you know, 7, 8 o'clock. It was dark. And he was just sitting on his computer and nobody was home. And all of a sudden, he just hears a very clear, clean strum of the guitar. Like, all of the strings were strummed. Not like something, it didn't fall, it was still standing up, and it was just a very clean, like, broom. And he freaked out, called us, and left the house and went to Waffle House, which is open all night, so he didn't have to be in the house alone.
I would go to Waffle House if I didn't even feel haunted.
Yeah.
I would go to Waffle House and just be like, something happened to me, carbs. You know,
I need carbs. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
No. So spooky things have happened here. So I don't know. I want to know who's haunting the house, but I haven't experienced any of it. Unfortunately, I wish I had seen a ghost. I would be down to talk to a ghost.
Oh my God. I am so intrigued by this.
I think what you need to do, this is your assignment, Gray, get a Ouija board and try to contact Mrs. West. Or Rosebud.
Honestly,
right?
I'm really intrigued to know what kind of activity exists.
I bet Mrs. West has a lot to say about this because she wasn't in the family and she got the short end of the stick.
Yeah, she's pissed.
She's so mad.
She had no land. She was not given any possessions. She was
probably
there.
The one night I wanted to go out.
Yeah,
I go to get my joy on. Oh, Gray, thank you so much for being here with us today and for story time. Appreciate you.
I love it.
Is there anything else as a local that you'd like to say that we haven't asked or you'd like to talk about?
About Macon. There was this other, I mean, I guess that this is a whole other episode, but when I was told, I told my brother I was doing this, he goes, oh, are you talking about that, the law student murder? And I was like, what? And he said it was like 2015 recently, the Mercer Law School downtown, this girl was stalked by a fellow law student and murdered and sort of chopped into like a bunch of pieces in her bathtub. Like, it was not that long ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that happened. It was this really big case.
If we research that, would you come back again? We'll do
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you do that as an extra?
Yeah. By that, you know, point, I will probably have been in touch with a medium and I'll be way more helpful for the Wolf Hawk. Right.
I mean, you might be in jail for this crime. But
is that possible? I think they're going to reopen the case?
Maybe. We learned a lot today. So.
You know, if there's anything we've learned this year, especially in recent events, anything is possible for, you know, recounting or reopening or, you know, it really, anybody can make up their own rules is basically what I'm trying to say. So,
yeah, that's what I've learned.
Yeah. For those of us and, you know, and our friends and fans who happen to be listening, you know, make your own rules, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
There is no law. What? No. What's that? Get a medium. Get a Ouija board.
Start a podcast.
Figure it out.
I mean, you gotta try.
I mean, we must say, though, thank you so much for chatting with us about this in so many different ways, especially and so many different angles. I'll be thinking about this for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be able to sleep tonight for sure.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh my God.
Mission
accomplished. What if we talked about this? What if we talked about this today and then something mysterious happens to Gray tonight?
I'll be on the lookout.
mm-hmm. around the 3 a.m., 4 a.m. witching hour.
So I'm serious, though. If you're inspired, I'd love a selfie at the tombstone. Not going to lie.
Okay. This is great that you guys are doing this. What a fun thing to do. That keeps your brains active in a different way. That's not just, when will I work again?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye.
Isn't he sweet?
What a cutie pie. I really hope something happens, like not bad. I don't want anything bad to happen. I just want a spiritual encounter to happen because I'm a big fan of psychics. I'm a big fan of mediums. My mother is also a big fan of psychics, big fan of medium. She has had several conversations with psychics that have told her in past lives, she and I have been together. Like there's some shit that happened in the South. Mm-hmm. So I've got a little bit of a affinity.
Oh my gosh, this brings out the artist in me. I want to write a musical for you and Patty Vosk. You're in giant hoop dresses, corsets, fans. There's a lot of Spanish moss hanging.
Oh God.
Around the two of you.
A weeping willow.
A weeping willow. Maybe some alligators.
Absolute. But I am going to say, I think there might be some spiritualization in Gray's neck of the wood.
Well, if I were a spirit, I would gravitate toward Gray because that is a beautiful soul right there.
A wonderful soul. Only the white, what do they call that? Like the energy.
White light
spirits, you know, the ones who are like, I'm here because it's not ready to let go, but I'm not going to bother you.
Right. Well, I get the opposite of that. I think just filled with venom and bile and torture.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I literally have stress dreams. Why do I keep having a stress dream that I have never finished my math courses in college?
Probably a math teacher who wanted to be on Broadway, maybe. A dead math teacher.
And if you're listening right now, you don't amuse me.
And on that note.
As always, we absolutely love you, killers. Thank you so much for listening, for being fans, and for adding your own information via our social media in every way. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content. And follow us on Instagram at Killing It on Broadway and Twitter at Killing It on B-Way.
Subscribe to us wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It on Broadway is a production of Killing It on Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.